Market was open today. It's Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. This is Overtime. I'm your host, Chris Vecchio, the man in orange, Julius Bebek, the man in blue, Dylan Radigan. Here to take you through the next hour as we get through the futures close. It was a mixed day on Wall Street where stocks came out strong out of the gate. We slumped mid-morning only to rally back early afternoon before then selling off softly into the close. Bond yields up across the curve. We are waiting for those Meta earnings due out in a few moments' time. We see here that gold, silver take a little bit of a step back today, although quite frankly, holding up better in the face of a stronger dollar and higher yields. And the dollar does continue to rip. Ilya, fresh yearly highs versus the Japanese yen. Is it time to put on an intervention trade yet? I know something that I was kicking around with Anton today. I was kicking around with Thomas Westwater today. I'm going to kick it around with you as well.
I'm going to do it.
Oh, boy. Well, we're going to
I mean, if ever there was a madman's delight, this is it.
I mean, if you can't buy the yen now, when can you? Anyway, Chris is trying to do his job. I'm sorry.
Outside of that, we see that energy falls down. And if you're trading the NGK4 contract, I guess it's a bad day for you because it's off by 9.16%. NGM4 is only off by about 5, but there may be an interesting trade set up in there. Oil slumps down a little bit. Otherwise, gentlemen, it's all about the market reaction to Tesla. We were not with you yesterday, and Meta earnings, I assume, are out now because I see the share price is down 7% here. And my screen, the 1 minute chart, just flashed a big red candle for me. So forget Tesla.
NASDAQ puts.
Forget the Tesla story for a quick second. Let's take a look at these Meta earnings as we see the share price is at 449. We're tracing a little bit right now.
Show us a chart. Show us a chart.
And I thought I did the share already. Oh, better show than tell. What was I doing? I'm like, oh, why is no one enthralled the way that I am here? Meta earnings. Well, I'm going to say something very Sosnoffian right now, Dylan. Does it matter what the EPS was? Does it matter what the revenues were? The stock's down. Who cares?
Well,
who cares? Why am I bothering looking for this information? Who cares? The stock's down. Okay. And obviously not something that's going to help the NASDAQ here after hours as we look at a performance where, Ilya, the tape today, you're getting a little bit of a rally in this market, but it didn't feel that strong. We're shaving off a little over 100 points here after hours now, thanks to these Meta earnings.
Daily candle on the NASDAQ looked pretty good. I was watching it on the hourly basically all day as I was waiting to see how it would close. And that doji there, I think, is very interesting. If we look at the way that NASDAQ went up from October.
What did you call it? That you said they called it a doji?
That's a doji candle, yeah. A doji candle in Japanese candlestick analysis, essentially a candle that goes nowhere. It's a candle of indecision. So you go up, you go down, you close almost with no change. A perfect doji candle would be the open and the close are identical. This is not quite that. It's a little bit better, I would argue. If you're bearish, it's down just a touch. But I was looking at this and basically saying, on the way up, the NASDAQ would make its foray up. It would retrace, then make the next foray up, retrace. And if you look at most of these retracements, they don't go all the way back to retest former resistance as support. There's usually a little bit of a gap here on the way up. It's not quite exactly. So I was looking at this and thinking, well, I could wait for it to get back into 1800 and miss the boat. Let me just reload here. This looks like momentum has been sapped. And so I was looking at it on the hourly, and once it rolled over on the hourly chart, I reloaded a put spread, looking for it to get back into something like 405 on the Qs, which would be just a little bit under the recent low on NASDAQ, on NQ here.
Well, I mean, this Meta thing, that's got to help your NASDAQ short.
It definitely does. I mean, it definitely does.
That's your best friend in town, I'll tell you. That's a good thing for you.
Yeah, it's helping.
Is Zuckerberg pulling the old Jack Welch here? Earnings for the first quarter, 471 versus 430 expected. Revenue, 36.46 billion versus 36.12 billion expected. First quarter adjusted revenue, $35.64 billion versus $35.57 billion expected. So those are three numbers that beat. Here's the problem. Second quarter revenue expectation, estimated $38.24 billion, guided $36.5 to $39. So yes, while the estimate falls within the range, the estimate's at the higher end of the range. And that's not really something you want to see, right? With NVIDIA, you had the market consensus for what second quarter revenues may look like. And NVIDIA came out and said, no, it's going to be much more than that. And the market goes, oh, we have to price in more money. Here, the market's effectively saying, oh, you're guiding lower? Fine. Now, that may be a good thing for the stock longer term. I call it the old Jack Welch, where you beat and then guide lower. That way, it's easier to clear the hurdle moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a market coming into this week. We've been saying it for a few days. The expectations were very high. Price for perfection. The fact that you came into this week where companies with positive EPS surprises were not seeing any benefit to their share prices. And those companies that were having negative EPS surprises, not having the typical 2.3% loss in the 2 days before and 2 days after, but it was a 6.1% loss for those negative EPS surprise companies. You really had to have perfect earnings. You had to beat on the top line. You had to guide better moving forward. And Meta just didn't do that here. And so the stock is down. Does it change anything about the NASDAQ though? And the technical setups, and I suppose this is an interesting checkpoint now about 3 hours after Futures Power Hour when we last discussed this, at least last I discussed this here on air. And I think the answer is no, because this is still just such a crummy place to enter.
But don't you think that, I mean, because Meta for sure is a bellwether beyond itself.
More so than Tesla is right now, absolutely.
Yeah. And so if Meta is bringing in guidance to go, this is enough to make Sasnov roll over in his grave, God help us all. But if Meta is bringing in guidance, does that not basically lay a little cold water, a little damp towel across the entire hyper growth, hyper AI? I understand or at the very least indicate that if there's AI momentum, it's still locked in the hardware chip transition, and it is not really radiated out into hyper growth on the consumer, you know, adoption rate, that the base of the expectation of AI deployment in the consumer market is not as rapid as would have been indicated by a very elevated Meta forward guidance.
I am so unconcerned about Meta and their approach to AI. They are the single company that concerns me the least.
No, but I'm saying it's Meta, but to what degree is Meta's tempering their guidance indicative more broadly of consumer demand for AI or adoption rate?
That's not surprising. I mean, if you want to like read through the tea leaves, Zuckerberg, and I've said this a few times this week as well, talking about AGI and the AI narrative. Zuckerberg was out there with an interview last week that was circulating on FinTwit, where he said, we're not going to have the power generation that we need to successfully build and sustain an AGI model for perhaps this year and maybe even through the end of next. And so when guided far,
I mean, he was talking like 2050.
Yeah. And he was like, this is to get there. You know, it's not going to be like we have the power and then AGI comes about. It's like, there's going to be a lot of incremental steps until we're fully there. So yeah. When I see him say something like that, and I look at their forward guidance, you're asking this question about AI. I kind of connect the dots and say, maybe they're guiding lower because they don't see the fruits of AI coming down the pipeline.
So then where does that leave Microsoft, for instance, which is another AI darling.
I'm going to have to look, you know, obviously only looking at the share price response and the market responding directly to the forward guidance. This is an earnings call that I'm very interested in listening to, because I think that one thing that Meta is doing with its Llama LLM model, right? It's open sourcing it, which seems like, okay, if you do something good, why not charge for it? If you can spend your time in a worthwhile manner, people should compensate for you for it. What Zuckerberg has done in the past, and this is an alpha capitalist move, it's kind of like something that comes right out of the Jeff Bezos playbook, is when he sees that there's a burgeoning industry, he's more than willing to throw a bunch of money at it, or a new product and throw a bunch of money at it and get something that is...
And give it away until you're addicted.
And make sure that people are in it. And more importantly, it prevents other companies from establishing a foothold, because you have this significant substitution effect where it's like, well, I can use this product for free and it may not be as good as ChatGPT, but it's 95% of the way there. And now you have the ability for all these researchers to look at the Llama or look at the LLM model and look at the weightings and tinker with it and fine tune it itself and constantly feed back to it. So it's helping improve in real time. It's not a closed box. So I think Zuckerberg's goal here is to basically develop the open source model that's head and shoulders above everyone else so that it crowds out the private closed models at the end of the day. So that ChatGPT may have been the first, but Zuckerberg is going to be the winner here because who's going to pay when both are indistinguishable to the human eye for the average consumer? I'm not concerned about Facebook's strategy. Quite frankly, this pullback in the stock is having me thinking, like, where is a place that we could potentially look to get long? I think the fact that we've now moved below the gap that we had around the last earnings report, remember we closed that day at 394.78 and we opened at 459.60. If the NASDAQ does roll over here, right, my whole game plan this week is just survival. Don't clear last week's lows through the end of the FOMC meeting next Wednesday. If the NASDAQ starts moving through the lows that we saw last week, I think you got to put gap fill on the board for Meta first. I think you got to think 394. And at the gap fill, hoping that volatility is still elevated because it's a 109.5 IVR right now. If we can have elevated volatility into a gap fill, that becomes a very interesting point at which you look to sell puts. But right now, this is not necessarily in a place, technically speaking, where there's any sort of support. We're in the middle of a gap. It's no man's land. There's no volume here. So this thing can continue to fall. It could easily rise back to where it was pre-earnings release. If people say, oh, you know what? They're just trying to tinker with our expectations because they don't want to let us down, but they've been still printing money. Either way, though, I think this is too soon to try to buy the dip or fade it. Mm-hmm. But you have a level where there's
Talk about a madman's delight. Any of these stocks in the first, you know, hour after earnings, good luck. It's a wood chipper.
Yeah, exactly.
Do I want to sell the 400 or like a 350, $400 put spread right now at 442? No, but if we get to 420 or 410 and we're on approach to it, I will play the gap fill and look for that to be the end of the sell-off. That's one way to approach it.
One of those where, like, if you're like, oh, I'm going to sell the iron condor coming in because on a volatility contraction, which would be very Sosnovian, but now you're getting your face chewed off because the lower wing is a mess. You know, I mean, this is, I'd rather own a DJT put than be anywhere near this as a madman.
Well,
yeah.
DJT, everyone's favorite former congressman, Devin Nunes, is in the news because he put in a request with the House of Representatives to formally investigate manipulation by brokers and traders into the share price of DJT. He's now the CEO of DJT. What's funny about this is that...
Is he coming for us for buying
those on the website, they put up instructions. Are you worried about your shares being lent out for those bad brokers and elites who are trying to rob you, the hardworking American, of your hard-earned dollars? You invested because you believe in the president and his vision. And here are these brokers trying to short the market into oblivion. Here's what you can do. You can tell your broker to not allow your shares to be lent out for short sales. So they have all these instructions on their website now, how to tell your broker to prevent your shares from being lent out. Citadel put out a statement about this a few days ago, and I'm curious as to whether you think they nailed the tone here. Quote, Devin Nunes is the proverbial loser who tries to blame naked short selling for his falling stock price. Nunes is exactly the type of person Donald Trump would have fired on The Apprentice. If he worked for Citadel, we would fire him, as ability and integrity are the center of everything we do. That's a really aggressive statement against the CEO, by the way. I've never heard a hedge fund put out a statement like that against a CEO of a company.
And Ken Griffin, by the way, big Republican.
Big Trump guy.
Not like big it's Trump a partisan, guy. You know, it's not like it's a deep leftist saying this. This is some, you know.
No, this isn't the Soros Fund.
Yeah.
No. This is a guy who's actively backing, you know, Republican candidates across the country at every single level, who's a big supporter of President Trump. And his firm is coming out and being like, what is this stupid crap?
I think everybody agrees that Devin Nunes is a proverbial loser, even Republicans.
I mean, when you start blaming markets,
you've already lost.
you've already lost. I mean, this is very this is very Recep Erdogan. That's what this sounds like. This sounds like, oh, what do you mean rate cuts are not bringing down inflation? Obviously, this is some kind of a conspiracy. I need to fire my central bank head five times over until I realize this is not how monetary policy works. Like, no.
The difference with the DJT.
That's not what this is.
But the difference with the DJT crowd, and you can't blame them, at least with the president himself, is no one has proven more effective at distorting factual reality to his own desires than this man has. And so, I mean, the fact that there's a company that makes no money, basically, that still has an enterprise value of God knows how many billion dollars. You know, I'm just saying that the delusion runs deep in this world.
Well, and by the way, people
can back and forth
go
is great.
And buy a flyer on Hopium. I mean, how much of the tech rally is Hopium?
I think the Republicans should just shift their allegiance to Ken Griffin. We'd all be better off to have Ken Griffin be the Trump. New Republican leader than Donald Trump. I think this might be a political play by Ken Griffin to decapitate DJT, the man, and step in so then Ken can be the Republican candidate for president. That might be what this is.
He's definitely a billionaire.
Would like to be president.
He is definitely a billionaire.
Well, it's not like he's worth and Trump's a billionaire too. That's not what I'm saying here. But like Ken Griffin is a different kind of billionaire than Donald Trump.
Yeah, Ken Griffin is a billionaire that created a revolutionary technology that displaced the New York Stock Exchange and has one of the most efficient operating culture on Wall Street for market making, to the extent to which he clears $400 million a month in income for himself. I mean, this guy is an icon of Wall Street greed, glory, and expertise, with love him or hate him. I mean, he's a real person who's done led the revolution. He basically ended market making as we know it and created a new system.
Well, you know, there's, aside from the palace intrigue here, which is fascinating, you know, Dylan, I think it's really, you and I didn't talk about this before the show, but when I saw the Trump media response to what Citadel had said in response to Devin Nunes, I actually got to the point where I said, is this going to be a problem for Trump for the election? And if it's going to be a problem for Trump for the election and the market begins to think that Trump isn't going to win, does it begin to price in a future in which you have, say, a Democratic trifecta? What does that mean for deficit spending, right? Because the Trump media organization says back, quote, Citadel Securities, a corporate behemoth that has been fined and censored for an incredibly wide range of offenses, including issues related to naked short selling, and is world famous for screwing over everyday retail investors at the behest of other corporations, is the last company on earth that should lecture anyone on integrity, end quote.
World famous for what now? Do we know of any cases brought?
For screwing over retail investors. What? Well, you know, because they were on the opposite side of the GME and AMC stuff. They were in cahoots with Robinhood.
They're on the opposite side of everything, though. I mean, come on. That's talking about.
Because they're a market maker.
That's what they markets. Do.
That's the point of the business. Aside,
it wasn't like they were just making a market in Robinhood.
If you're trying to buy, somebody's got to sell it to you. I mean,
they buy it. Yeah, come on.
Yeah, like
if you want an Apple, you need an Apple vendor.
I think Ken Griffin is trying to get it. I think Ken Griffin is trying to be the Republican nominee. And I think that there's no greater, and nothing scares Donald Trump more than being a loser.
Well,
and so to call Devin a loser is to call a Trump proxy a loser. That's the worst thing you could say about the man.
It's also very, very Trumpian language, because he's used that particular epithet a lot.
Well, it sounds like they were speaking in Trump's language to signal to Trump, hey, this is a guy that you don't want around you. You want someone serious running your company. You don't want this guy there, right? Because if I'm Ken Griffin and I see this going on, I get up Trump on the phone. I go, why the hell is this going on in public? Why don't you just call me up and say, like, can you get on the phone with one of my people at my company and explain to him what's going on with the share price? Because you don't want to risk losing his support.
But this entire stock is an obvious, self-evident, and well-understood scam. Right?
Well, sure. But the bigger picture for the market is, right, Trump's election odds. Trump doesn't have a lot of money. He put up this money for the bond in New York, right? But he's clearly strapped for cash right now. There's a reason why he's selling shoes.
Didn't the collateral on the bond get pulled anyway? I think the attorney general was back.
No, they let it. The judge allowed it to go through, right? As of yesterday, I believe. But the point is that he's strapped for cash. And so he really needs Republican donors to come in with the money. And so if he's picking fights with one of the biggest Republican donors, then how's he going to run ads later on in the year? I mean, it could affect his ability to successfully run a campaign if he starts biting the hand that feeds him, proverbially speaking. And if Trump's election odds go down materially, which, by the way, as of today, he's winning. Bloomberg just put out new polls, 7 swing states. Donald Trump has leads in 6 of the 7 states. In 4 of the 7 states, the leads are outside of the margin of error. So if the election were held today, Donald Trump would be president based on the polling data that's available. So I wonder if we get to a point, there's no trade here right now. It's just something I have. I wrote it down today and I have it on a sticky note here just to remind myself of it. Watch Trump's election odds alongside DJT because it could have an impact on the bond market in the run-up to the election where the market says, okay, we're not going to have a split Congress anymore. Democrats are going to be full control because the top of the ticket's melting down. What does that mean for deficits? What does that mean for taxes? What does that mean for the potential of tariffs with China? What does it mean for future Ukraine funding or Israel funding, right? Right now, the market's in a place where it looks like we're going to have gridlock again. And that's a pretty comfortable place because where we are now isn't going to change much over the next year or two. But something that could dramatically impact Trump's chances where he no longer looks like he's the front runner for president, that could possibly ripple through the rest of the market. I don't want to dismiss that as a possibility. The DJ put I have again, it's talk about being a proverbial loser. That's the proverbial loser here, this out of the money put. Granted, it only cost $1.10. So max loss, what, $110? That's why it's the madman's trade. High convexity payout, basically no expectation of it ever hitting. But I'm not a fan of this.
It'll come around. I'm in there with you. It'll be all right.
It eventually gravity will kick in just like it does with everything over time eventually. But this is a stonk. It's a meme stonk. It's not a regular single share.
Right.
And so you can't treat it normal. And I still wouldn't be trading this day in and day out because it's so easily manipulated. Like the fact that we have an 11% rally today because the CEO of Trump Media asks the House to investigate manipulation into the stock specifically. He's calling up his old Republican friends. Hey guys, I need a favor. It's going to help Donald Trump. Hey, Donald Trump will look favorably on you if you advance the investigation because it's going to make him wealthier. This is a highly manipulated share price. Obviously, I mean,
somebody's got to call the SEC.
Oh, with my one single put, I'm not going to be that person, but I think that this is the risk though, right? Again, this is about the risks and being aware of the risks. This is a stock unlike anything else, but I think it's an interesting thing to watch if you're not trading it, because as you've pointed out, Dylan, it seems to be a direct barometer for his perceived election chances. And he said himself that the market was rallying in anticipation of him getting elected. And there's just like that little stupid voice in the back of my head that says, yeah, that's ridiculous. But then again, when DJT got crushed, and if it is a barometer for his election chances, as Dylan holds out, and Trump says that the market was rallying because his election chances were up and the polls shifted against him the last few weeks, then maybe DJT is down because his election chances are down. And maybe that's why the market was down broadly, which is nonsense, but it is a thought that crossed my mind.
I don't attribute anything about the way the stock market more broadly has behaved to anything about this election whatsoever. I don't think anybody could even begin to care when stock markets here are concerned about how this election in November is going to go. I think it's so close when you look at the average polls, and there is such relative consistency when you look at kind of the big ideas as far as fiscal policy. I mean, are we going to get any smaller of a deficit if we get a Trump presidency? No. Both of these are big deficit type of administrations. I would say the really big difference here would be something like currency policy. And we've talked about this before. The Heritage Foundation put out something like their recipe for fiscal policy. And it's been talked about, admittedly, and I want to disclaim this loudly, the Trump camp has not endorsed this, but there's been chatter that this Heritage Foundation thing is kind of like a blueprint for the fiscal policy.
Yeah, Project 2025.
Framework for a Trump administration. And in particular, the part about the U.S. dollar, the part about neutering the Fed and its independence, the part about trying to get the dollar back on some sort of a asset-based or a commodity-based or something-based other than fiat kind of thing. That would be a stark difference were they to actually embrace it. It would be essentially the end of U.S. hegemony as we know it were that to be adopted, because it would undermine the most important thing for the U.S.'s ability to sustain large deficits with impunity. It would undermine U.S. dollar liquidity. We don't have to go far. When the U.K. got back on the gold standard in early Winston Churchill as prime minister days, we're talking sort of early 1900s interwar period, it absolutely, I mean, to say that it was destructive is to say nothing. It basically spelled the pound's demise as a global force and handed the baton to the dollar. So our ability to borrow with impunity rests on the idea that the U.S. dollar is the quintessential unit of commercial exchange and there is no alternative. And that's because of its unrivaled liquidity. If we screw with that liquidity, it's over. And if it's over, then we can't borrow with impunity and everything comes crashing down. That would be a key difference were it to actually be embraced.
Were it to be embraced. Ilya, you brought up the U.S. dollar, and I'm going to skate away from Trump here a little bit. Obviously, not supposed to be a political conversation. We're just thinking about how this particular stock fits into the broader, you know, influence of the market, and politics obviously influence markets. So, Dylan, using your theory, it's a proxy for Donald Trump's election odds. How are you trading this thing right now? And is it really tradable? And when you look at the statements made from the CEO and from Citadel and going to the House, it's difficult to get a read on the thing because it's so heavily.
No. It's a clown show.
It's a clown show.
It's a gossip. I mean, it's very pleasant, but it's really useless. It's good that we're moving on. Let us do something. Come on.
So some actual trading ideas.
We had our fun.
Ilya, dollar yen spot rates crossed 155 today. We haven't seen these levels since 1990. 6J trading at 0064.945. This has been one of the places both you and I were optimistic earlier this year. Obviously, it hasn't worked out because bonds have not exactly cooperated. I know for myself, I've stayed away for a few weeks now, having been burned a few times. And I said, you know what? I need to see some very specific conditions set back in place before I get long. And while those conditions haven't been met, it feels like we're getting awfully close to a point where the BOJ and the Ministry of Finance have to do something because they keep trying to verbally intervene and warn everyone. And yet the yen continues to weaken. Zero Hedge said earlier today that Japan is watching the Weimarization of their currency happening in real time. That may be a little obtuse or an exaggeration of the situation.
Times like these that Zero Hedge makes me roll my eyes back into the upper neck.
Come on, I'm buying the yen tomorrow, first thing. This is ridiculous.
Okay, so oil hasn't stopped rallying. It hasn't stopped falling. It hasn't stopped rallying. It's been moving around sideways the last few days, but it's not going anywhere. U.S. yields continue to push up. There's been a big breakdown at the long end of the curve. You look to ZB today, the little bit of a rally that we've seen over the last few days. You got on a four-hour time frame, right? This move off the lows in the middle of April. Bounce, bounce, bounce. Today, we break that uptrend. So bonds are weakening. Yields are taking another leg up. Oil hasn't collapsed. Why would the BOJ or Ministry of Finance intervene tonight? Why would it be this week right now when the winds are not blowing at their back, Ilya? Because this is a this kind of is a madman's trade, right? Selling a put spread really isn't madmanning because you're doing it in a risk-defined manner. The madman thing here to buy like a 10 delta call, right? So if there is
an intervention. Yeah, just go all in, yeah.
No, just like something small. So if like the market doesn't do anything, keeps falling, you have a defined loss.
Yeah.
Whereas if the thing actually does happen, you're going to get a big tailwind. It's going to be a waterfall kind of trade where you'll make the 10 to 1.
And the FXY might be a way to do it if the 6J future is large. FXY is an ETF way of getting size down. So if you wanted to put something on that's small, you could do it here.
Okay, so my question though is, forget product, right? We can have, right. once we have the idea settled, then we can talk about, like I do with silver. Okay, I'm bullish on silver. Can I get this in SI or I have to go to SLV? We can have the conversation about FXY, about dollar yen spot, about 6J. But the question is, before we even get to deployment, is this the right time to deploy this idea?
I don't think so, because we have a BOJ policy meeting this week. And that's a very significant event risk for this whole conversation.
But isn't it a catalyst? I mean, what on earth is the BOJ going to do other than anything in their power to support the yen?
Yeah, and to his point, Ilya, isn't it true that after the last BOJ meeting where we got the changes in policies, the immediate response by the market was they're not going to do anything else the rest of this year? So how can the BOJ meeting disappoint us?
Well, I think what we're looking for here isn't really the outcome of the meeting so much as we're looking at the markets who are aware that the meeting exists. And so they're looking at it and they're not going to front run it. They're going to wait and hear what the BOJ is going to say. This is much the same as the US GDP numbers tomorrow. It's ultimately, I think, more important that there is a release than what the release actually says. Getting on the other side of event risk is just baseline risk management. And so I think what you're going to look at here with this BOJ meeting is essentially the market's going, okay, let's let them say what they're going to say. Now, there's been a lot of squawking from BOJ officials about we don't like that the yen is being so erratic. We don't like that this is happening so quickly, yada, yada, yada. Now, are they going to actually announce some sort of yen policy? No, I don't think so.
What about an intervention? What about something aggressive that says, listen?
I do think that there is room here for them to kind of chin check and basically have in the language, like, look, we don't think this is helpful. We think that inflation isn't helped by the yen weakening to this extent, because obviously that's inflationary. And so if the Bank of Japan signals something along the lines of, look, we don't like the trajectory here, this is a concern. The last CPI number, incidentally, was kind of a mixed bag, but a little bit softer ultimately than expected. So it's not like Japanese CPI data is screaming for the BOJ to hike again. But if they come out here and say something along the lines of, look, if the yen keeps doing this, we're going to have an inflationary issue. It's going to start to undermine our ability to keep a lid on this thing. Then you'd get the kind of thing that gets the yen moving a bit higher off the announcement. And if you create that tailwind, that's where the intervene. And so
the only way they'd intervene is into something that is already has some buoyancy.
That is already occurring. Yes. Because the Bank of Japan, it seems like figured out right around 2010 or so.
Yeah.
They don't want to fight the market. They want to let the market kind of shoot its shot, run out of bullets, get to a point where everybody's like, oh my God,
that's
crazy. Okay. And
it's
then,
judo.
And then yes. Bump it when it's going your way.
And then bump it when it takes a back step.
Think about what happened in December. When did we hear the BOJ start shaking the tree about how they could potentially start thinking about a policy shift? It was after yields started falling back and oil prices came down. It was in it was early December. Think about how bonds had bottomed a few weeks earlier, how oil had topped out a few weeks earlier. I mean, that was why the BOJ started planting the seeds when they did, because they realized they could get the most bang for their buck at that moment in time. Mm-hmm. So that's why when I see oil prices doing what they're doing, if I'm going to play this, right, obviously the high convexity thing would be to buy an out of the money call right now. And, you know, I was looking at what happens for the 9 days expiry. If you buy like the 66 or 67, 0066, 0067 calls, your max loss is going to be like $100, $200.
I mean, how about this?
But this is a call spread. This is 44 days out. Right. Mm-hmm. So let's say we need to have a little bit more time because oil isn't coming in. We want to just get some skin in the game with the BOJ meeting this week. Mm. Along at the money or along out of the money call spread, buying the 0068, selling the 0068 and a half. Again, intervention type of play, not the tasty methodology whatsoever. Tom would absolutely be saying, don't do this. But I think he's in a meeting right now. So the inmates run the asylum. 13% probability of profit. Max profit 581 and a quarter against a max loss of -43.75. So there's your madman condition, Dylan. 10 times max profit relative to the loss.
But I'm second guessing. So here's the thought I'm having as I'm creeping in this direction is, what if Japan likes a weaker yen?
They don't like a weaker yen.
They don't like a weaker yen. So
makes Toyotas cheaper. Makes.
Well, so you know, here's the thing.
Makes their.
This is a great point.
It's a bump to their. It's an export economy. They're never going to be the reserve currency. They know that the dollar already is the only thing that'll wreck the dollar is the United States. No one else is a threat to the dollar, no matter what anybody thinks. So take a little discount and throw some Toyotas around and have a good time. What's the problem?
So I think this is really the key. Historically, that would be a very potent argument for Japan, because you would say, here's an export-based economy. They could use a cheaper currency that makes the exports cheaper.
I mean, the Chinese are famous for keeping their currency weak it's mercantilism 101.
The problem, so the difference, it's not even a problem. The difference in Japan is Japan figured out quite a long time ago the near-shoring idea, because they are the oldest population in the world. They know they can't build these things in Japan. So this is a difference.
That their number one issue is population collapse, not...
Meaning that Toyota factories are in Mexico and Canada and the United States. So
Toyota is producing and selling in dollars from the beginning.
Exactly. And so it's a different story. It's more like if the yen collapses, consumer purchasing power goes with it, and Japan imports 60% of its food. And Lord knows what.
And basically, food costs and energy costs go up to the roof. Basically.
And the only thing that's keeping Japanese inflation high at this point is food.
Mm-hmm.
Imported food is overwhelmingly the reason Japan has inflation anywhere north of even 1%. Never mind.
And what does the yen have going for? Why on earth? What's the reason to own yen? What's the best fundamental reason to own yen at any price?
I think the reason
value proposition for a yen?
Falling rates. If you are going to have rate cuts this year of some amount,
it's just
there is only one major central bank that's not cutting.
Mm-hmm.
Only it. One. And that's Japan.
And so basically higher longer has been banging on the yen all year.
Yes. Yeah. Look at what happened with the yen in 2022 as the rate hike cycles were going. It got absolutely demolished.
Mm-hmm.
The only kind of major yen uptick that was tradable and that I did very well with was the tail end of last year. So as I was buying EZU to have exposure to the risk on rally through European stocks, the other thing I was doing was buying yen, because rate cut expectations were getting built into everything, yields were falling, and the yen's kind of perpetual 30, 40 year yield disadvantage was getting squeezed tighter to the yen's benefit. It was a great buy. But of course, as soon as the year turned, and the data out of the U.S. started getting better, and those rate cuts started to fade out, the yen got smoked.
Mm-hmm. All right,
At 155.35.6 here in dollar yen spot rate, the highs, Ilya, you're talking about like what, 160 for the 1990 effectively high? Like, it's a nice round number.
I feel like when I lived there, it was like a 120.
I'm just trying to figure out like what the 6J implied rate would be, which I suppose you could simply do by just flipping dollar yen on its head. That's close enough, right? So 60, 2.5. You know, the long call spread thing is obviously nice, but the tasty methodology way of doing this would be looking at the short put vertical. And I'm looking at this 45 days out, 67% probability of profit. It's kind of right in the neighborhood of where we like things, you know, 63, 64, 65, anywhere around there. I kind of like the long call spread idea better because it's defined. It's a much smaller defined loss.
And it's better risk reward.
Yeah, right. Because here we're effectively saying like this is saying the rally is going to stop. The other side of it is like, I just want to have something on the table in case they intervene. And with oil doing what it's doing,
it doesn't have much going for it.
Right? Because like, just look at it here. Like, if we were to do the short call vertical right now in the 45 days out, just at the money, 66% probability of profit, max profit 250, max loss 375. That's okay. That's actually pretty good for a 66 probability of profit. The profit versus loss is pretty good, all things considered. But you're calling the low then, doing it this way. I like taking a longer duration going out of the money. That's why I was looking at the long call vertical. If you go out to the July contract here, the 6JN contract, 72 days from expiration, and we can do like a 69.5, 60. So it's only 13%, but max loss is $62. And it's more than double the max profit potential. So you talk about the convexity of the trade. You're taking a much... This is obviously, I don't think it's going to go to 0069, but we're just hoping for the market to move up. Now, one of the problems with this, someone in the chat probably saying, I don't have it open, but Chris, if the yen goes up, doesn't that mean volatility is going to come off the board because the market's been going down as vol has risen? And so if you're long and out of the money call, isn't it possible that the crush in vol prevents the call from realizing its full potential? Yes, absolutely. So Dylan, I say all that to say this. The point you brought up earlier, I think it went unnoticed, but it didn't go in the back of my head. The condor may be the best way to do this, quite frankly, because you can bracket it out on either end. Yes, maybe even the strangle here, quite frankly, if you're going to do it wide enough because of where the volatility is. But you can blow the strangle out wide enough. You can give yourself somewhere in the neighborhood of 70% probability of profit. You can have the max profit. That's a little bit more than it was if you were simply doing the short put spread. And if vol comes back in and the price rallies, you should benefit from this as well. There's a few different ways to skin this cat. I prefer not to do short put spread right now, given the price action. If it's an intervention trade, I'd rather do the long out of the money call spread. But the most practical way of playing this market right now with an IVR of 81.9, maybe just doing the sell the strangle, which is, I'm sure, something that Sosnoff would be thinking about right now when you look at a market like this, Dylan.
Yeah, I mean, this is old school, straight up Sosnoffy and tasty trade, right? Especially with an 81 on the IV.
Especially with an 81. Will we see a yen intervention this week? Ilya, I think you're on the no side for now. I'm on the no side for now. But if it happens and you have one of these flyers on, you can benefit. I'm going to take a look at this a little bit more later today. Guys, we have about 13 minutes left in today's session. We were mentioning oil prices. Commodities here are not exactly coming back in, even though we've seen some of these geopolitics come off the table. Dylan, as our resident oil expert who was selling calls last week and caught the big down move and even held through the overnight tensions on Thursday.
I'm sitting here. It's not, and I'm losing, right? The truth is I'm not losing a lot, but again, I am no longer making money. It's a minor rot. I still hold on to this thing's going lower.
Do you have a specific price in mind that you see as a tap out point? Like, hey, if the market crosses the April high, the high that we had on Thursday night last week when Israel was launching those attacks in the Iranian theater. Yeah, I mean,
the high is the one that you're looking at, which is, I'll call it something around 85, plus or minus.
Okay, I think that makes sense, Lee, right? If we
like
clear
out the- In other words, if it gets north of 85, I'll be like, you know, I better pack this thing in and be happy with the, remember I had that, I did whatever was a two-day option off of that Friday and made a killing. You guys then scolded me for being, you know, well, you didn't scold me, but you were like, you know, you can stay in there. You know, I was a little, if you had held it, I make a couple bucks. I'm like, I got to take it. you know, but then I reloaded. And then on the reload, it's gone nowhere.
Reload, you were going to reload anyway, right?
And I added duration, right? I just bought.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you had done the shorter duration, the trade would be a lot more lopsided right now.
Yes. No, I would have lost everything because if I just was rolling, you know,
the 3 days
click, because the first outing after Friday was a 2 day. I think I picked up 48 hours, and I got lucky obviously because it just got blasted, and so then I cleared out of there. But the reload.
I wouldn't be surprised if this goes better come 24 hours from now.
My trade or the price of oil?
The trade. And the price of oil would be lower. If we look at the way that markets responded to US PMI data earlier this week, there's a very clear kind of the markets want bad data sort of thing going on. And when that PMI number came out, I mean, much weaker than expected, dollar got rocked. Stocks rallied. It was unmistakable. I mean, it happened at the minute that the data came out. It was like right there. You couldn't ignore it. So when you have this GDP number tomorrow, if you get a sense that, okay, this number, even if it's a little bit softer, by the way, is giving us an economy that's on a trend that's hotter than what the Fed wants. And I think it's going to have a really hard time being meaningfully disappointing in that sort of relative sense. It might miss the headline, but it can afford to miss the headline by a little. The dollar is going to run. And crude oil is priced in dollars. Mm-hmm. So I think you might get some relief here. It seems, for what it's worth, that this has rounded something like a top. It's still holding at support, like immediate support, but it's clearly struggling on its attempts to bounce off that support, which suggests that, yes, it recognizes that there's support, but it doesn't really have the oomph to do anything about it. So it seems to be just waiting for a reason.
Mm-hmm. I will point out technically that 2134 EMA envelope support starting after the close on February 8th. Every dip since then into that envelope has been caught. We have been catching along there. You go back to the weekly. Nope, that switched to a different product ticker. We go here and back down to the two. We go back to the highs that we had in June 22, September 23, and like we're still bouncing on that area too. That's that yellow line cutting across the screen diagonally on the daily time frame. The point is that, you know, oil hasn't really given it up just yet. Tomorrow is an interesting day too, because with the GDP report, there's a little bit of a divergence that I see in the expectations. Like the consensus forecasts are 2.1 to 2.4. Atlanta Fed has it pegged at 2.7%. And they've been pretty accurate. They've been a good forecasting bunch recently. They missed, but they've been a lot more accurate than
other
forecasters.
There's an interesting range there. I was looking at the three big nowcasts, Atlanta, mm-hmm. New York, and St. Louis.
You can't.
St. Louis is so bad. St. Louis is terrible. St. Louis is at 1.7. New York is at 2.2. Atlanta revised from 2.9 to 2.7 today. So There's a spread there.
There's always a spread there. St. Louis had the economy contracting in the third quarter when we put up a near 6% growth rate. So yeah. I'd be like, yeah, that's also the thing for me. Like, let's look at the most recent quarter, which was the most accurate one? Okay, that's the one you should trust immediately because they've done the fine tuning to the model. And so when I see St. Louis, people are like, oh, the St. Louis Fed says we're in recession. It's like, but they haven't gotten any of the calls remotely accurate for the past few years. No. So you can't trust the model.
No, the model's no good. But there's clearly a range is what I'm saying. But yes. when you look at the central tendency in the Fed's summary of economic projections, right? That I think is the key. That tells you that the Fed sees a central tendency of 2 to 2.4% average for the year. The median is 2.1. Now, if the median is 2.1 and the central tendency is 2 to 2.4, then the range skews low. It skews closer to 2 than it does to 2.4. Just arithmetic there. Which means that if you get a number out of this GDP report, which is expected at 2.5, so outside the Fed's central tendency, if you get, let's say, 2.4, maybe even 2.3, that's a hotter economy than the Fed wants to see. Because if the median is 2.1 and the spread is 2 to 2.4, it's skewing to 2.1, 2.2. So you get 2.4, Fed's got to rethink this whole three cuts thing.
Well, they've already started to do that.
Well, we start to get that talk already. But in the market's reaction...
Listen, we're getting a hike.
No, but that's Powell and Williams' comment last week,
yeah,
prior to the blackout window going into effect, to effectively temper the market's expectations so that if you get a hot GDP and a hot PCE, the market doesn't say, oh God, what's the Fed going to do? That they're going to go, oh, well, you know, the Fed recognized that this is a possibility, so we don't need to fully freak out. But that said, though, bonds are already breaking down again. And you mentioned that the central tendency for the Fed, because of the recent summer of economic projections, is actually on the lower, is more geared towards the low end, and is certainly below where the Atlanta Fed's looking right now. So if it's a 2.5 or 2.6, or let's say it's the Atlanta Fed's 2.7% tomorrow, bonds here, if it's ZN, which is kind of like just bouncing around and gliding around the lows, but still no higher high in this recent series of swings since the start of April, ZB already started to go down the pipe. We see that break today. You look at UB, it's a very similar situation. The long end of the curve is getting hurt more than the short end of the curve. I mean, that makes a good deal of sense. You could also see it in the bond auctions. That kind of hit me today when I was looking at the five-year auction results, which were not great. They weren't good at all. They were bad, but they weren't like terrible. You tailed through by about 0.4 basis points. The bid-to-cover ratio drops. The indirects fall. The directs fall. It's the largest five-year auction on record, so seeing a little bit of softer demand wouldn't be a surprise. But over the last few weeks, you've noticed that the note and bill auctions have been fine at the short end of the curve. And as you move into the belly, they get a little bit worse. And then the long end of the curve results have not been good at all. And you talk about shifting term premium, Ilya. And we talk about possible reinflation. And the economy is not slowing down. And that's a situation that just demands higher yields. Plain and simple, particularly at the long end of the curve. The Fed doesn't need to do anything. ZT doesn't go anywhere, right? It's stuck. But ZN and ZB need to reflect a new world. So GDP tomorrow, oil is not breaking down yet, and bonds are not bouncing, even though all the geopolitical risk is off. I got a hard, I know Tom says he likes the bonds here, Dylan. I just don't see it still. Am I missing something?
I don't see it.
I don't know. We got 3 minutes left, and I would just like to note that Meta is getting face pounded.
Absolutely face pounded here. I have it down at 4. You know, I have this chart up on TradingView right now, and I had 6J and dollar yen spot rates on there at the same time. And so I just clicked to Meta, but it kept on the dollar yen spot rate. So I have a tick on my screen for 155. And I thought Meta's share price was down at 155 right now. So I almost
spicy.
I was like, oh, Ilya, you're paying for dinner next time, by the way, if you're still holding those NASDAQ shorts. And I may need to go have a conversation with my wife about our retirement savings. But no, Meta traded at 436.04, down 11.64% after hours.
Extent here.
Honey, we're going to We're having hot dogs tonight.
We're moving to Ilya's house. That's it. Yeah, to San Francisco.
It's hot dogs and matzah for dinner for the foreseeable future. look, they guided lower is the big problem here. The numbers itself. It's so interesting how this market, you see it with Tesla and with Meta now. The street did not care about the first quarter. The street cares about what's happening in the future. So guidance from Microsoft may be more important than their actual earnings results.
Probably, actually.
Guidance
especially,
from NVIDIA.
Especially from Microsoft as like the cradle of the AI civilization, as it were.
And Microsoft down to about 1.4% after hours here, 402.38 on the chart. And you could see this because happening.
Because I think Meta is an AI bellwether, at least for consumer adoption.
Ilya, as you like to say.
Not mad.
Horizontal levels matter a lot. You can see it coming to play here, right around 410, 415, going all the way back to where we were in March. And then what do? We rally up there overnight yesterday, and we can't take it out. I'm just going to draw this little, there's your little swing zone. Resistance, support, 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 and resistance. And we failed right around that, you know, 410, 415 area again. So Microsoft here, right? This is why all week long, even with the rally, you know, Ilya, my tune has been, it's nice, but do you trust it? It feels like a bull trap because we have not cleared out the former levels of support that have become resistance in every single market. So as a bull, someone who believes in the market long-term still, given the forward return stats of what typically happens in markets like these, I want to just survive the next five trading days. I don't want to see 49.64 cleared out in ES. I don't want to see a new low in NQ. I don't want to see a new low in Russell. Name of the game this week is survival. Ilya, as a bear, you guys got to get it done this week.
We need to get this thing together.
If I'm looking at the market on Thursday, May 2nd, and the S&P is still trading at 5,000, 550, 5,100, and it's not through the lows,
I'm gonna get worried.
Right, because the bulls say to themselves, hold on a second. You just gave us World War III threats. You just gave us spiking bond yields. You just gave us declining rate cut odds. You just gave us companies that are getting killed by earnings, even when they're good.
And not just companies, but you've punched the consumer adoption of AI in the nose in terms of the rate of adoption, I should say.
Which, right? You know this, my song and dance on this whole AI thing for months now has been the market is trading as though this is all realizable on a global scale tomorrow. But actually, before the promise of all this actually starts to pay dividends, like, I'll see you in like 10 years.
Which means the three of us at least have a job for the next 10 years before they get, AI or Ilya AI. Yeah, I'm just going to end the show here.
In the immortal words of Sean Price,
Ilya,
I work so hard. Ilya, it is stupid.
I was thinking of the Billy Madison quote, like, what you've just said was incoherent and rambling, and we're all dumber for listening to it. And with that, overtime is now out of time. You're welcome for that tidbit at the end. I've been Chris Vecchio. Man in Orange has been Ilya Spivak. The Man in Blue, Dylan Radigan. We are not here tomorrow. We are off tomorrow. We'll have a video on demand, so be sure to come back. We'll replay today's episode. So if you actually heard this and you want to hear us again, that's a good time to do it. If not, don't come back. We'll see you on Monday for the next episode of Overtime. Good luck trading the rest of this week. We'll see you on Futures Power Hour. But next, you get more Ilya with Macro Money. Coming up next on Tasty Live.
Stay tuned, everybody.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Live, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live, Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live, Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.